From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now!
I'm here urging all Americans to go to votersforpeace.us, sign the pledge to only vote for candidates who are working to end this war, who are calling for an immediate end to the occupation of Iraq, and who will work for peace, who will work for nonviolent resolution to conflict as our elected representatives.
Cindy Sheehan is famous for taking on President Bush over the war that killed her son. Now she's also challenging Democrats who support it.
I'm running the United States Democratic primary for the U.S. Senate in New York. My name is Jonathan Tessini, and I believe that anybody who voted for the Iraq War has to be held accountable, and that includes the incumbent senator from New York.
Today, we speak with anti-war candidates taking on Democratic incumbents in the House and Senate. Jonathan Tessini in New York, Marcy Winograd in California, Ned Lamont in Connecticut. And we'll speak with John Boniface. He's taken on the voting system nationwide. Now he's taking on the Secretary of State in Massachusetts. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Supreme Court has agreed to take a pair of cases that could result in the end of government efforts to maintain racial integration in public schools. The court's expected to decide on what measures, if any, public school districts may use to maintain racial balance. 3 years ago, the Supreme Court ruled that universities had a compelling need to consider a student's race if it was to maintain diversity in classes. But the court's makeup has changed significantly since then. The author of the University of Michigan ruling, Sandra Day O'Connor, has since retired. Her replacement, Samuel Alito, has openly opposed racial and ethnic quotas. In other education news, newly released statistics show that only 2% of this year's freshman class at UCLA will be African American, the lowest number at the school since 1973. The school is expected to have just under 5,000 freshmen this year. Only 96 are African American. 20 of them are recruited athletes. At UC San Diego, just 1.1% of the freshman class is African American. According to the Los Angeles Times, the problem is rooted partly in the restrictions placed on the state's public colleges and institutions by Proposition 209, the 1996 voter initiative that banned consideration of race and gender in admissions and hiring. In Iraq, concern is growing that U.S.-backed forces may soon launch a major offensive in the Sunni city of Ramadi. On Monday, U.S. forces fired artillery at the city's train station. Hospital officials said 5 civilians died and 15 others were wounded. The Red Crescent reports over 100 families have recently fled the city, fearing that a large-scale military operation is imminent. Last week, U.S. military officials announced they were moving 1,500 soldiers from Kuwait into the region surrounding the city. One Pentagon spokesperson declared Ramadi had become the most contentious city in Iraq. On Monday, the influential Sunni Association of Muslim Scholars warned the Iraqi government not to support any U.S. attacks on the city. A top European diplomat has arrived in Iran to present the government with a package of economic and political incentives to persuade Iran to give up its domestic uranium enrichment program. Iran's top nuclear negotiator vowed Iran will closely study the proposals, which he said contain positive steps as well as some ambiguities. The incentive package was drawn up last week by the 5 veto-wielding members of the UN Security Council: the United States, Britain, France, Russia, and China. A new report has determined that members of Congress and their aides took over 20,000 free trips worth nearly $50 million paid for by corporations, trade associations, and other private groups between January 2000 and June 2005. The study's author, the Center for Public Integrity, concluded, quote, "In many instances, trip sponsors appeared to be buying access to elected officials or their advisors." In Washington, President Bush called on Monday for Congress to ban same-sex marriage.
An amendment to the Constitution is necessary because activist courts have left our nation with no other choice. When judges insist on imposing their arbitrary will on the people, the only alternative left to the people is an amendment to the Constitution, the only law a court cannot overturn.
President Bush spoke before lawmakers and members of several groups from the religious right, including Exodus International, which promotes what it calls freedom from homosexuality through the power of Jesus Christ. The group claims it has helped hundreds of thousands of ex-gay men and lesbians become straight. In Somalia, Islamic militias have announced they've seized control of the capital of Mogadishu after months of fighting with U.S.-backed warlords. The warlords have controlled the city for the past 15 years. In Gaza, dozens of gunmen connected to Hamas stormed the studios of Palestine Television on Monday. The gunmen smashed equipment and accused the station of favoring Mahmoud Abbas's Fatah faction. This is Lana Shaheen, manager of the station.
We today are shocked by those gunmen wearing Azzedine al-Qassam uniform attacking the Palestine TV station in Khan Yunis Governorate, threatening to kill the Palestinian TV cadre as well as destroying our equipment. We, the employees of Palestine TV, condemn and denounce this criminal act.
Lana Shaheen is manager of Palestine Television. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld is traveling to Asia this week. During a stop in Vietnam, U.S. military officials admitted that Washington will not compensate the millions of Vietnamese suffering from the effects of Agent Orange used by the U.S. military during the Vietnam War. Meanwhile, Rumsfeld traveled to Indonesia to mark the restoration of Washington's military ties to the Indonesian government. The United Nations warned Monday the world's deserts are facing dramatic threats because of global warming. This is Kaveh Zahedi, deputy director of the United Nations Environment Program.
The report shows that climate change is having a serious impact on deserts. We see that temperatures are rising. We see that rainfall is decreasing in many of the deserts and is due to decrease even further. We see that the glaciers which support the ecosystems within the deserts are melting. And of course, all of these and the change in the temperatures, the change in the rainfall patterns and regime is putting species under great pressure.
And there is an update on the case of Jose Padilla, the U.S.-born man who was held in solitary confinement for 3 years before being charged with a crime. His lawyers are now alleging the government's case against their client relied in part on statements made by a government witness who was tortured. Padilla's defense team has filed a motion to suppress evidence and statements connected to a man who says that while in detention, he was whipped, hung from the ceiling of a cell with leather straps, and tortured with razors. In news from Washington, President Bush's new domestic policy adviser has been caught lying about his past. The official, Carl Zinsmeister, has maintained he was the founding editor of the American Enterprise magazine, published by the think tank of the same name. In fact, the magazine was founded 4 years before he became editor. Questions are also being raised about past comments Zinsmeister made about journalists. In March 2003, at the start of the Iraq War, he said, quote, "A significant number are whiny and appallingly soft. I almost wished there would be a very loud explosion very nearby just to shut up their rattling." In Greensboro, North Carolina, the city's mayor is rejecting a call to apologize for the city's role in what's become known as the Greensboro Massacre. On November 3, 1979, 40 Ku Klux Klansmen and American Nazis opened fire on an anti-Klan demonstration and killed 5 labor activists and injured 10 others. The Greensboro Truth and Reconciliation Commission recently concluded the single most important element that contributed to the violent outcome of the confrontation was the absence of police. No one has ever been convicted of criminal charges in the shootings. And in education news, a Massachusetts company is launching its own private radio network to be piped into school buses. The company, Bus Radio, claims the radio station, quote, will take targeted student marketing to the next level. The company plans to begin broadcasting this fall to 100,000 students in Massachusetts and then take the program national next year. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The 2006 midterm elections are just 5 months away. In the Senate, close to 36 seats are up for grabs, while all 435 seats are open in the House. Democrats hope growing public discontent with the Bush administration will help them win control of Congress from the Republicans. But some of this year's most heated races won't just come down to Republicans versus Democrats or independents in November. Rather, in primaries this week and continuing through the summer, some of the country's closely watched races will pit Democrats against Democrats. And there's one main issue that's creating the fault line, the war in Iraq. Across the country, a handful of challengers are taking some of the leading Democratic figures to task for voting to send U.S. troops to Iraq and refusing now to bring them home. On this issue and others like government wiretapping, these candidates say many elected Democrats have betrayed core party values and provided political cover for the Bush administration. For today's broadcast, we'll hear from four of the candidates that are shaking up races around the country: Jonathan Tasini in New York, Marcy Winograd in California, Ned Lamont in Connecticut, and John Boniface in Massachusetts. We begin here in New York with Jonathan Tasini, union leader and organizer, former president of the National Writers Union. He's running against the incumbent New York Senator Hillary Clinton for the Democratic nomination. Joining him in the Firehouse studio is Cindy Sheehan. Since the death of her son Casey in Iraq in April 2004, she's emerged as one of the leading figures of the anti-war movement in the United States, co-founder of Gold Star Families for Peace. She's called on Democrats to vote against their pro-war incumbents. Welcome to Democracy Now! Both.
It's a pleasure to be here.
I want to start with Cindy Sheehan. Tell us about this nationwide movement where you have Democrats not only taking on President Bush, but taking on their own party.
Well, I think it's imperative. We have basically right now in Congress a one-party system. We have very few Democrats who are speaking to our core values as progressive liberal Democrats, and they are rubber stamping and bobbleheading everything that this administration wants to do. And it's so urgent right now that we have an opposition party. And I believe that Democrats courageously spoke out to their core values, saying this war is wrong. If we voted for it, we shouldn't have, and to call for an end to the occupation of Iraq, I believe that we could have a government that is run with integrity, and we could, the Democrats could have a landslide victory in November if they would act different from the Republicans. And I'm supporting these candidates who are saying that this war is wrong, we need to bring our troops home, and we are not going to support the Republicans who are corrupt and who are leading our country down this path of destruction.
You're here in New York. You have personally spoken to Hillary Rodham Clinton. Mm-hmm. What did that conversation consist of?
Well, I was talking about the personal cost of war, about how her policies and her support of George Bush and this war, even though she says it's a mistake, you know, the war is being fought incompetently. There's no such thing as a competent war. And I told her about the pain of being a mother who lost a son. We talked about other mothers who have their children in harm's way, who are worried beyond anything they can imagine. And at the end, she said, well, we have to complete the mission to honor the sacrifice of your son. And I think, and have been calling for, an end to the killing, that the killing has to stop sometime. How much killing is enough killing for these people? And there's no mission. She can't define the mission. George Bush can't define the mission. And just to keep them there because they're there is not a good mission.
Jonathan Tasini, you were head of the National Writers Guild. What made you decide to become a candidate for the U.S. Senate?
Well, about a year and a half ago, several people who I know in the political movement in New York approached me to discuss the idea that somebody had to run against the incumbent senator because her position on Iraq was appalling. And beyond Iraq, actually, we have lots of differences. But if we focus on the war, how could it be, they asked, that in New York State, one of the most democratic states in the nation, that we had an incumbent senator who voted for the war, has been a great advocate for the war, and as Bob Herbert put in a recent Times column, is her position is no different really than Bush, Cheney, and Condoleezza Rice. And I gave it a lot of thought over many months. Mainly, I thought that somebody had to do it. I was involved in many other union organizing projects that I didn't want to put aside, but ultimately last summer I decided that I would do it.
Last week, both the Republican Party of New York and the Democratic Party had their meetings. Tell us what happened at yours.
Well, you know,
nominating conventions.
I'm not a naive person. I've been around politics for a while. But it was shocking to go to the Democratic State Convention and find out that they would not have spoken the two words Iraq War had I not been there. The Clinton campaign did everything possible to make sure that the Iraq War is not debated for obvious reasons, because if the Iraq War is debated and Democratic primary voters find out what her position is, and many of them are still vague about it, then I think a lot of people will vote against her. And I pushed a resolution that was finally debated, not my resolution, something quite weaker. But the fact that we finally got them to focus on the Iraq war and talk about it for a few minutes. It wasn't a real debate, but to focus on it a few minutes and not just have receptions and parties and coronations was, I think, a major step forward. But it was an eye-opener that our own state Democratic Party refused to debate the Iraq war, the most important issue in this election.
What does it take to get on the ballot? Cindy Sheehan is here with you today because you're headed up to Union Square to begin a search for how many signatures?
You need 15,000 throughout the state of New York, and they have to be you also have to get 100 in at least half of the congressional districts. There are 29 congressional districts. We have to get 100, at least 15. So we have to get about 15,000, but you probably have to get at least two or three times that because our signatures will probably be challenged by our opponents. But we have this amazing network of volunteers all across the state that come into the campaign over the last 6 months. People can volunteer actually at TassiniForNewYork.org. That's our website, TassiniForNewYork.org. And we have this amazing group of people, so they're going to be out in the streets. Cindy's going to join us up in Union Square for the kickoff. Today is the first day that you're legally allowed to collect signatures.
And how long do you have?
You have about 6 weeks, 5 weeks, till about July 13th. That's the final day when all the signatures have to be in. But realistically, you have to have it done by July 6th.
We should say, of course, we put in calls to Senator Clinton's office. They did not get back to us about coming on the program today, as the other candidates, the incumbents, also did not agree to come on the program today. Here we are in New York. We're talking with Jonathan Tassini and Cindy Sheehan. Of course, talking about Hillary Rodham Clinton is not just talking about the next possible senator of New York or the, you know, Hillary Clinton being reelected as senator, but possibly president of the United States. So what happens in this country, in this state, really matters? What kind of debate or questions that are raised in New York?
Well, I think that there's no question that because of who I'm taking on, there's an enormous amount of spotlight and attention to this race. And I think that's important for a couple of reasons. One is we have to send a message to the Democratic Party that we will not support Democratic candidates who support illegal and immoral wars. We also will not support and should not support Democratic candidates, incumbents, who are for the death penalty, who believe that NAFTA is a good thing, who sat on the board of Walmart for 6 years, whose best friend now is Rupert Murdoch, who's going to hold a fundraiser for Hillary Clinton. She is out of step with the Democratic primary voters in New York. So I believe that, separate from what might happen after 2006, she does not deserve re-election simply because of her record in the first term. I believe that, you know, 2008 is 50 political lifetimes away. We're focusing on her record now, voting for an illegal and immoral war. Simply on that, she doesn't deserve re-election.
Cindy Sheehan, what do you say to those who say, if you do this, support candidates against Democratic candidates, that you are ultimately supporting the man in the White House who declared the war, who took your son, that took your son?
Well, I think the candidates who—I'm supporting Jonathan, I'm supporting Marcy in Los Angeles, I'm supporting John Boniface. And they are running against people who support George Bush. And I believe that we are not going to get leaders of integrity and honesty and courage until we start voting with our integrity. It's time for us to stop holding our nose and voting for the lesser of two evils, because that person might be just a little less evil, but they're still supporting the evil policies of the Bush administration. So we have to stand up and have courage. If we all have the courage we need to vote for people who do have integrity, then we're, our leaders will get leaders of integrity, and that's the only time we will.
And it goes even beyond I think Cindy's absolutely right. Cindy and I work very closely with something called Progressive Democrats of America, PDAmerica.org. We see a long-term vision of what we're trying to do, which is to build a progressive movement throughout the state and throughout the country. We're also very much in favor of pushing the idea of impeachment. I mean, you have two leaders who deserve to be impeached and removed from office, and I've been saying this from the beginning of the campaign. Certainly, if I was in the United States Senate, I can say that certainly about Marcy in the House, if I was in the U.S. Senate, I would be supporting Russ Feingold's attempt to censure Bush. We have a Democratic Party that's running for cover and not supporting the immediate impeachment in the House and not supporting censure in the Senate. We can't have a Democratic Party that has no spine.
We're also joined in Los Angeles studio by Marcy Winograd. She's teacher and longtime activist running against the incumbent California Congressmember Jane Harman for the Democratic nomination in California's 36th congressional district. The primary vote in that race is today. We welcome you to Democracy Now!
Thank you, Amy. Great to be with you.
It is good to have you with us. Why have you taken on Congressmember Jane Harman?
Amy, it was time for somebody to challenge the leadership of this party that has been all too willing to acquiesce to the Bush agenda of eternal war. I happened to see my opponent on Meet the Press on February 12th, at which time she said that she kept quiet for a year and a half while being briefed on the massive illegal wiretaps being conducted by Bush and Cheney because, frankly, she didn't know the law. She is a lawyer, but she didn't know the law. Besides, she said, she deplored the fact that the leak had been revealed, that the wiretaps had been revealed, that people now knew the truth. And when I heard that, what raced through my mind is, wow, we have a Democrat who is surrendering the Constitution. She championed the war in Iraq, took to the floor of Congress to sell this war, refused to join 133 other members of Congress who said no. And now what will happen if George Bush decides to invade or conduct airstrikes over Iran? What will she say? What will the Democratic leadership do? And I knew that at that point, somebody had to challenge her.
What did it take for you to run in this primary, since each state has different requirements?
Actually, it was not a very rigorous bar. I had to collect about 40 signatures and pay $1,600. Listening to Jonathan talk, I thought, wow, I really got off easy on this one. But besides that, it did take a great sense of urgency. I would not have done this had I not felt that we were on the precipice of losing any semblance of democracy and plunging ourselves into yet another war.
And how hard is it to take on the Democratic Party? How much criticism is there within that this is an absolutely key time for people within the party to come together and to open up the debate in a primary like this will only weaken the Democratic candidate?
Well, I'll have to tell you, it is tough. I mean, initially people would say to me, wow, Marcy, you really have a lot of courage. You're really gutsy to do this. And my response was, no, I'm just passionate about peace. I really do believe that that is the course for our future, not preemptive war. I have a great sense of urgency. But as we continue to campaign throughout the 36th District, which is a 30-mile-long district that stretches from the port of Los Angeles on up through the heartland of defense contractor territory into Venice and West L.A., progressive areas, I saw that I was meeting with some pretty intense resistance from those inside the party, even those who you might consider progressive in the Democratic Party, that there is a club, and it's called incumbency, and a challenge to one is a challenge to all.
You are running against a Congressmember, Jane Harman, who is the ranking Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee. She's gotten the support of the United Farm Workers, United Auto Workers as well. Your response?
Oh, yes, the United Farm Workers Union and the United Auto Workers has—they have both endorsed my candidacy, as has the United Teachers of Los Angeles. I've been a union member of the teachers' union for 12 years. Initially, they had endorsed Jane Harman, but through tremendous grassroots lobbying, we were able to overturn that, and they, in the end, rescinded their endorsement and endorsed me instead. We are seeing a lot of support from rank-and-file union members, regardless of what the leadership is doing in those individual organizations.
Jonathan Tessini, what kind of support have you gotten? It seems that the major organizations have not gone yet to supporting your candidacy, that Hillary Rodham Clinton has it pretty locked up.
First, let me wish Marcy, my friend Marcy, really good luck in the election today.
We have been
both Cindy and I are really pulling for her and hope she wins. Look, it's obvious that Clinton is a very big power in the Democratic Party. People fear her. Most of the, I think, union organizations, the heads of the unions, will probably end up supporting her. And like Marcy, I think I'll have a lot of support from the rank and file on the issue of the war, on the fact that my opponent says NAFTA was a good thing, and I think I can't wait to talk about that in the places that have been devastated by NAFTA. When they hear that she was sat on the board of Walmart for 6 years, I think there are many union members who have been working to defeat Walmart who will be shocked by that connection to corporate power. So I'm pretty confident that we'll get the rank and file support. At the same time, we've gotten great support from PDA, Progressive Democrats of America, from Village Independent Democrats. There are many Democratic clubs in New York City who rejected the incumbent and supported me, and many who took no position, no endorsement, which was, again, a rejection of the incumbent. When we talk about where she stands. When we talk about where she what she really stands for and what her positions are, Democratic primary voters reject her. Zogby just did a poll that showed that if there was a contest between Clinton and an anti-war candidate, Clinton would get 38%, the anti-war candidate would get 32%, and the rest aren't sure. So there's a great vulnerability there, and I think that we're going to shock the political establishment.
Cindy Sheehan, do you see pushing third parties now? In 2004, John Kerry, John Edwards, they authorized the invasion. They voted to authorize Hillary Clinton, Joseph Lieberman. We'll be speaking with the candidate against him in a minute as well. Mm-hmm. The major leaders of the Democratic Party.
Right. I think that now that I've been a world traveler, I see how governments can be held accountable if there's more than one party, more than two parties. And like I said, we have to start putting up candidates, electing candidates that go with our Beatitudes. Martin Luther King Jr. said we can't make our leaders change their Beatitudes. We have to make them conform to our Beatitudes if we are going to have a world where we can bring up our children and our grandchildren.
Do you think you would run?
I got to get our kids home first from Iraq, and then we'll see.
Marcy Winograd, do you support impeachment of the President of the United States?
Absolutely. And I do want to say that I am the president of Progressive Democrats of Los Angeles, which is a chapter of Progressive Democrats of America. There's been a lot of talk about impeachment within this organization, and I am now running ads on Air America. I'm a part of an impeach team with Charles Coleman and Bob McCloskey, two other challengers to incumbent Democrats. And we are calling for the impeachment of Bush and Cheney and asking everyone to join us in calling on members of Congress to sign on to this as well.
Well, I want to thank you both very much here in New York for joining us, Jonathan Tessini and Cindy Sheehan. I know you're headed up to Union Square right now to kick off your petition drive. Marcy Winograd, I'd like to ask you to stay with us for a moment after break. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. Jonathan Tessini running against Hillary Rodham Clinton for the Democratic nomination for the U.S. Senate, and Cindy Sheehan, Peace Mom.
Thank you.
This is Democracy Now! Back in a minute. America's Boy by broadcast here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. Marcy Winograd in the Los Angeles studio. She's running against Jane Harman. The Democratic primary is today. We've heard something, though not verified, about a last-minute issue that has been raised, a last-minute Election Eve complaint that's been filed with the Los Angeles courtroom, calling on L.A. County's Registrar of Voters to immediately remove Diebold electronic voting machine tabulations. Do you know anything about this, Marcy?
Yes. A number of people went to court yesterday to seek an injunction against the use of Diebold GEMS, which is a tabulator. The county, as far as I know, has been using sort of a hybrid system that combines a microtally tabulation, which the county created. It's a voting system the county created, along with a Diebold system. And this group had gone to court. We have formed an election protection team as part of my campaign. I've been very involved in the election protection movement. And we have been sending letters. My husband is the honorary lawyer who's heading up this team, and we've been sending letters to the County Registrar and Recorder's Office asking for assurances that there will be no internet hookups, no modems attached to these tabulation machines.
We are also joined in the studio by Ned Lamont. We turn back to the Senate for one of the most watch races of the primary season. Joseph Lieberman, the three-term Democratic senator from Connecticut, is facing his first major challenge to reelection since he won his seat 18 years ago. Senator Lieberman has been one of the most vocal Democratic supporters of the Iraq War. Anti-war sentiments growing in Connecticut. A recent poll showed more than 60% of Connecticut's voters believe the war in Iraq is wrong. Disenchantment with Lieberman within his own party has grown so vocal he recently refused to rule out leaving the Democratic ticket and running as an independent. His opponent joins us now in the Firehouse studio. Ned Lamont is a former telecommunications executive, won a third of the delegate vote at the Democratic Party state convention last month to put him on the ballot in the primary on August 8th. We did invite Senator Lieberman on the program, but was unavailable to join us. And Marcy Winograd, we want to also thank you very much for having spent this time on this primary day. Thank you for being with us from Los Angeles. Ned Lamont, can you talk about why you've taken on Joseph Lieberman? He is a powerhouse in the Senate.
He's a powerhouse in the Senate, but he hasn't been in Connecticut for a long time, and he hasn't been listening to the people of Connecticut and what they think. And I think, in particular, we have a Democratic primary that's coming up on August 8th, and the Democrats want Democrats to stand up and be bold and clear about where we stand, and we want to hold President Bush accountable for the mistakes that he's made. And Senator Lieberman is too likely to worry about undermining the credibility of the president. And I worry about a president that's fundamentally undermining a lot of the basic values of our country. I see a president that's trying to, you know, privatize Social Security. I see a president that's trying to replace Medicare and Medicaid and universal health care with health savings accounts. I see a president that's just plain wrong on the war in Iraq. And if Senator Lieberman won't challenge the president on those mistakes, I will.
Do you want to see President Bush impeached?
You know, I don't. I can't bear the thought of a President Dick Cheney. But I was surprised by the Democrats, you know, when Russ Feingold stood up a few months ago. And it seems to me that the American Bar Association and Senator Lieberman and others have said that the illegal wiretaps were illegal. There's little question about that. And we should hold the president accountable. And I agree with Feingold that I thought censure was an appropriate remedy there. And I was surprised that more Democrats didn't step up and support him on that.
You're a telecommunications executive. Who did you work for? What company?
We started up a little company of my own. It's called Campus Televideo. And I'm pleased to say that we took Free Speech TV and Link Media to about 200 college campuses around the country. So hopefully some of them are watching the show today.
What do you think about the telecoms that have been working with the government voluntarily, without subpoena, offering up their databases, their information, emails, phone logs to the government?
Well, I think it was wrong, and I think it was stupid. I mean, I can tell you as a telecom person that the folks that we provide service for care very strongly about their privacy and their security out there. And if there's a sense that the ISPs and the telecom companies are just handing over their private information to government authorities, you know, with no judicial oversight at all, that's bad for business and it's bad for the American Constitution.
Joseph Lieberman ran for president, very much now has supported the war. What is your sense of people in Connecticut around this issue? Who is he representing if these polls indicate most people in Connecticut are opposed to the war?
I think he's representing himself. I think that the people of Connecticut have it right. They know that stay the course is not a winning strategy. It's time for us to change course, time for us to get our troops out of harm's way and start bringing them home. And I don't think the senator has been in the state. He hasn't listened. And I think he's wrong on that.
How much pressure was there on you not to run, not to weaken a Democratic candidate in this midterm time when the Democrats could take the House and Senate?
There was some of the party brass in State Central there in Hartford, Connecticut, didn't like the idea of a primary. They thought we might be rocking the boat, don't jeopardize a safe seat. But by the same token, I can tell you that the grassroots support was overwhelming. And that's at the town committee level, the delegates at the convention, as you pointed out, where we far exceeded anybody's expectations. And I think going forward, people realize that this is good for the Democratic Party. We're having an old-fashioned kitchen table debate about what type of a party we are, what do we stand for. It's for the heart and soul of the Democratic Party. And on August 9th, we get together again and we go forward. So I think it's going to be good for the Democrats, and I think the party brass will eventually come around to that.
As I travel around, it's bloggers I've been meeting from Connecticut who are mentioning you. What is the blogosphere doing in Connecticut?
Well, I'm new to the blog world, but I'm a big fan of the blog world. I got to tell you that when I started talking about getting into this race early this year and the establishment media came in, it was all about polls and all about money and all about process. It was the blogs that said, look, we understand that Senator Lieberman is wrong on these big issues. We don't exactly know who Ned Lamont is all about, but go to see him at Naples Pizza up in New Haven and hear what he has to say. And all of a sudden, instead of having 20 well-wishers, we had 120 or 150 people showing up, and it was Connecticut blog and myleftnutmeg.com and others that were generating an awful lot of interest in this campaign. We went up there. We started talking about health care for everybody. We started talking about clean energy and investing in our country again rather than spending $250 million a day in Iraq. And the numbers started growing. And I thank the blogs for focusing on the issues and getting us off to a great start.
What exactly, Ned Lamont, happened at the Democratic State Convention in Connecticut? And where was the issue of war?
At the convention, which was a couple weeks ago now, we had to get 15% of the delegates in order to qualify for the primary. And it's a public ballot. You have the party chairs and the district chairs all looking at their delegates and trying to round up support, generally behind the incumbent. That's the way they think. And I got to tell you that we had more than twice the number of people stuck out their necks, showed an awful lot of courage, and said, we want this debate to go forward. We want fundamental change in Washington. So we ended up with over 33% of the delegates came forward. And I think the war was important. But the war was not important only because it's a misadventure in Iraq that means nothing to American security. It was also important because it says so much about what our priorities are as a country.
Senator Lieberman is taking you very seriously. He's already launched ads against you. Will you be taking out ads against him?
The senator is now taking this race very seriously. For the first 3 months, he wouldn't mention my name. Now, in his ads, all he does is talk about us. He's not talking about his record. He's not talking about his positions. He's talking about Ned Lamont and, you know, who I am. You know, we've done some TV advertising in response. I thought it was you know, sort of humorous ads by Bill Hilsman. It sort of hit on the issues, talked about the war, talked about our priorities. And we're thinking now about how we respond to these very negative ads that the senator launched about a week ago.
How will you deal with them?
How will we deal with it? One, by dealing with the facts. We're going out over the internet. If you go to our site, you can see each of the charges he made, and you can see what our response is. So you know clearly, you know, why his attacks are wrong. But more importantly, what I've got to do is I've got to introduce Ned Lamont. You know, I've been in this race for, you know, 3 months now. I've gone flat out around the state. I've gone to over 50 town committees. I've gone to over 100 towns. I'm introducing myself person by person. And what you got to understand is there's probably 400,000 Democrats in the state of Connecticut who are likely voters on an August 8th primary. If half of them turn out, that's probably not a bad number. So we can meet people, we can get in front of them, and make sure that these abusive ads are contradicted by just us standing in front of folks and saying what we're about.
Ned Lamont, I want to thank you very much for being with us. At this point, after the convention, is there any other requirements that you have to meet in Connecticut? I think people are very interested around the country, whatever party they're in, how it works, how you really enter the political fray if you feel deeply about something and you feel your elected representatives are not representing you.
It's a total grassroots effort. We've got tens of thousands or, you know, 10,000 people who have come to NedLamont.com. They've signed up as volunteers. They've made small money donations. I appreciate all that. Now what we need to do is mobilize that grassroots support in each of our towns. Friends, family, and neighbor, tell your friends we've got a real credible winning alternative to Senator Lieberman. We have somebody who will stand up to President Bush.
Before you go, I just wanted to read a quote from Senator Lieberman, who's been one of the leading Democrats to support the Iraq War. In November November, he wrote an opinion piece for the Wall Street Journal entitled, "Our Troops Must Stay." Senator Lieberman wrote, quote, "I'm disappointed by Democrats who are more focused on how President Bush took America into the war in Iraq almost 3 years ago, and Republicans who are more worried about whether the war will bring them down in next November's elections than they're concerned about how we continue the progress in Iraq in the months and years ahead." Your response.
Senator, I'm disappointed in Democrats who don't stand up to this Bush administration, who don't stand up to all the false assumptions that we went into this war. You know, it was President Bush that said it would be easy, we'd be greeted as liberators, weapons of mass destruction, and Senator Lieberman cheered on the president every step of the way. That's not the role for a constructive opposition, and I think Senator Lieberman was derelict in his role by not challenging the president there.
Ned Lamont, thank you for joining us, the Democratic senator, the Democratic candidate for senator in Connecticut.
Nice to be back.
This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. When we return, we're going to speak with a challenger within the Democratic Party in Massachusetts who's taking on the Secretary of State. Stay with us.
Election time's coming. Who you gonna vote for? Yeah. If I was president, I'd get elected on Friday, assassinated on Saturday, buried on Sunday, they go back to work on Monday. If I was president, if I was president, if I was president, yeah. Instead of spending billions on the war, I can use that money so I can feed the poor. 'Cause I know some so poor. When it rains, that's when they shower, scream and fight the power. That's when the vulture devours. If I was president, I'd get elected on Friday, assassinated on Saturday, buried on Sunday, they go back to work on Monday. If I was president, if I was president, if I was president.
Wycliffe Jean, if I were president. Here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report, I'm Amy Goodman. As we continue our coverage of the candidates looking to unseat key fellow Democrats this year, we go to Boston to John Boniface. He is a Boston-based attorney. He is the founder of the National Voting Rights Institute. He's running against the incumbent William Gavin for the Democratic nomination for Massachusetts Secretary of State. John Boniface is the only Massachusetts Democrat to challenge an incumbent from his own party in this year's primary. Welcome, John.
Thank you, Amy. Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you with us. Well, you're well known as a voting rights activist all over the country. Why go for Secretary of State, and why run against the Democratic Secretary of State in Massachusetts?
Well, the Secretary of State's office is a critical office for the country, for safeguarding the integrity of our electoral process, for protecting our democracy, and protecting our right to vote. Post-Florida 2000, post-Ohio 2004, we know that there are still people in this country today who would dare to trample on the right to vote and dare to deny the franchise. And we need to have a proactive leader for the Secretary of State's office here in Massachusetts, for our state and for the country, to take back our democracy, to safeguard our process, and to stand up for the right to vote. I've been engaged in doing that throughout this country, including here in Massachusetts. And I think it's time that we show some leadership for Massachusetts and for the nation in what our democracy can be for all of us.
John Boniface, one of the criticisms of your candidacy is that you're really a green in Democrats' clothing, that you are challenging the Democrat, but that this is really an unfair race, that you're representing another party. Your response?
Well, look, my opponent is a go-along, get-along Democrat. He's a 12-year incumbent. He represents entrenched power. Under his watch, the U.S. Justice Department is investigating four cities in Massachusetts, Boston, Lawrence, Springfield, and Lowell, all for violations of the Voting Rights Act. He had nothing to say while we were defending the Massachusetts Clean Elections Law all the way to the state Supreme Court. He worked last fall to kill Election Day registration, a Democratic bill in the legislature, and he did that working with Republican members of the state legislature. I'm a Democrat who's going to stand up and fight. He wants to raise this.
What do you mean by clean campaigns?
Well, Massachusetts Clean Elections Law was a sweeping reform law passed by the voters in 1998 to create public funding of elections here in Massachusetts. It's a model reform that exists already in four states, Arizona, Connecticut, Maine, and Vermont. And we ought to have it here, and we ought to have it for the country. Elections should not be about how much money you have in your own bank account or how much money you can raise. They should be about what are your ideas, what is your vision for your community, your state, and your country. We need to take big money out of our politics. And so I'm running against a go-along, get-along Democrat. I'm going to be fighting for the core values of our party and fighting to stand up for ordinary citizens and for our democracy. It's a red herring, what he raises. I'm a registered Democrat. I've voted in every Democratic primary in my life. And it's time we have some leadership from this party, for Massachusetts and for the nation, to safeguard our democracy.
John Bonifaz, what does the Secretary of State do in Massachusetts or any state?
The most important responsibility a Secretary of State has in most states, including here in Massachusetts, is to serve as the chief elections officer, to make sure that our elections are administered in a free and fair manner. It also includes oversight over the corporations division in terms of registering and operating for corporations, and make sure that public records are accessible for all citizens, and it ensures that we have a government accessibility for people accessing our government. You know, the Secretary of State's office is often the first entry point for citizens seeking access to our government. And government ought to be about us, not about those who are in entrenched power situations and don't want to have more competition, more people participating. It ought to be about all of us and equal participation for all.
We're talking to John Bonifaz. He is running for Secretary of State in Massachusetts against the Democratic Secretary of State, William Gavin. Reading from the Boston Globe, this is before the Democratic convention that took place in Massachusetts. He says that you should be denied a spot in the September primary because you aren't really a Democrat. He has a long history of involvement with the Greens, asserts Galvin, referring to the Green Party, which lost its designation as an official political party in 2004 and is now called the Green Rainbow Party. He has failed to support Democratic candidates. Democrats have to scrutinize his candidacy. Is it real or a green Trojan horse?
You know, my opponent did everything he could. Everything he could to try and stop this candidacy from getting on the Democratic primary ballot, and he lost. We doubled what we needed to get at the state party convention this weekend and on Saturday. We got nearly 30% of the vote from delegates. Over 1,300 delegates heard our message and said, yes, we want to have this open and honest debate about the state of our democracy and the state of our right to vote here in Massachusetts and for the nation. And I'm ready to have that open and honest debate. I'm not interested in engaging in this kind of labeling. The reality here is that I'm standing up for the core values of the Democratic Party. And it's time that we have people who are going to stand up and fight. We've seen what happens when we allow Ken Blackwell's and Catherine Harris's to deny the right to vote, to deny democracy for all of us. It's time we stand up and fight back. I went to Ohio. I fought for a full recount of the presidential vote there on behalf of presidential candidates who were willing to fight for that recount, including Green Party presidential candidate David Cobb and Libertarian Party candidate Michael Badnarik. I'm proud that Kerry Edwards finally came into that case, but the reality was that it was Democratic voters and it was third-party presidential candidates that really stood up and fought for that recount. We need to stand up and fight back. There are people who are going to fight to deny the franchise, and we need to fight back, and that's what this party ought to stand for.
What do you think of the piece in Rolling Stone by Robert Kennedy, was the 2004 election stolen, saying that Republicans prevented more than 350,000 voters in Ohio from casting ballots or having their votes counted, enough to have put John Kerry in the White House?
I think it's a very important piece. I think it demonstrates that we never had a full investigation, as we should have, into what happened regarding Ohio. I went to Ohio right after the election. As the lead counsel in the recount case, I can tell you that the votes were never properly counted. In fact, we faced resistance throughout Ohio from election officials who refused to engage in any kind of meaningful recount. And so what we have here is an enormous amount of distrust with respect to whether or not our elections can be seen as trustworthy. And we as a public need to be able to trust that our votes are being properly counted and need to know that our democracy is working. And when we don't believe that, then democracy at its core is under attack. Our democracy is threatened. We cannot have people serving in public office who possibly were not really elected. That's not democracy. And yet we have that with the current president of the Oval Office. He was the first president ever to be selected by the United States Supreme Court, not elected. And we didn't have any full counting of the votes in Florida. And then we have this cloud of suspicion, this cloud of fraud in terms of what happened in Ohio.
John Boniface.
And I think it demonstrates we have to stand up.
I want to thank you very much for being with us. John Boniface founded the Voting Rights Institute, and he is now running for Secretary of State and Democratic ticket in Massachusetts. As we end today's show, we turn to Noam Chomsky, the renowned linguist and political analyst. He was in New York Monday, where he gave a news conference at the United Nations. Democracy Now! Is there to capture some of his two-hour exchange with reporters from around the world.
Remember, the U.S. is a global power. So you can't just look at one region. You have to look at what's going on everywhere. So if we go back, say, to the last intelligence projection of the Clinton administration, National Intelligence Council, year 2000, their projection for the next 15 years, they, just keeping to energy, but there's a lot more, took it as a matter of course that the United States would control Middle East oil. They don't discuss that much. And then they say the United States, though it will control Middle East oil, because that's a lever of world control, nevertheless, it itself will rely on what were called more stable Atlantic Basin resources, meaning West African dictatorships in the Western Hemisphere. That's what the U.S. will rely on. Well, what's been going on in Latin America since then significantly threatens that. For the first time in its history, first time since the Spanish colonization, Latin America is moving towards a degree of independence and also a degree of integration. The history of Latin America is very sharply split between a tiny rich elite and huge poverty, and the rich elite, who are have been the only active ones politically, they were oriented towards the colonial power. So that's where they ship their capital. That's where they have their second wealthy homes, send their kids to school, this whole business. Very little integration internal to Latin America. I mean, even the transportation system shows that. It's beginning to change. They're moving towards a degree of independence and towards a degree of integration. And the United States is terrified. Just keeping to oil alone, it means that the energy resource, I mean, the major energy producer in the hemisphere is Venezuela. The U.S. kicked the British out under Wilson, Woodrow Wilson's, known as Wilsonian idealism. They kicked the British out as soon as the oil age began because they knew that Venezuela had enormous oil resources. That meant supporting a bunch of utterly brutal dictators while Venezuela became, by 1928, the leading oil exporter in the world. It's remained very high. Venezuela is now going towards independence. And the United States is frantic. That's why you have this hysteria about Chavez. It's not because he's attacking anyone or anything like that. It's hysteria because he's not following orders. It's kind of like Serbia, but much more serious because this is a big energy producer. Furthermore, it influences others. The major energy producer in South America, second to Venezuela, is Bolivia. Well, you know, what just happened there. They're moving towards independence as well. And in fact, the whole region from Venezuela down to Argentina is pretty much out of control. Not totally, but pretty much. The U.S. in the past has had two fundamental mechanisms for controlling Latin America. One is violence. The other is economic strangulation. They're both weakening. The last exercise of violence was in the year 2002, when in its dedication to democracy promotion, the U.S. supported a military coup to overthrow the elected government of Venezuela. Well, had to back down, for one thing, because there was a popular uprising in Venezuela. But another reason was just the reaction in Latin America, where democracy is taken a lot more seriously than it is in North America and Europe. And people don't think it's amusing anymore to have elected governments overthrown by a military coup. So the U.S. had to back down and turn to subversion instead, which is what's going on now. That's the last major use of violence. Incidentally, the U.S. preparing for more use of violence. If you take a look at the number of U.S. military personnel throughout Latin America, the military bases, the training of Latin American officers, that's all going up very sharply. In fact, for the first time ever, there are now more U.S. military personnel in Latin America than personnel for the major federal aid organizations. That never happened during the Cold War. Also, military training for Latin American officers, and you know what that means. Military training is being shifted from the State Department to the Pentagon. That's important. The Pentagon, the State Department, is under congressional supervision, and there are conditionalities, human rights and democracy conditionalities. They're not imposed very much, but they're there, you know, and they have some effect. You switch it to the Pentagon, there's no controls. Do whatever you want. And the whole region surrounded by bases, and I suspect there will be secessionist movements coming along in Venezuela and Bolivia and possibly Iran. So the military option has by no means been abandoned, but it's nothing like what it was before. I mean, in the past, you just overthrew governments, you know, didn't think twice about it. As for the economic option, that's being lost too. The most dramatic case, perhaps, was Argentina. Argentina was the poster child for the IMF, and following IMF rules, it led to the worst economic disaster in its history, totally collapsed. Then, violating IMF rules radically, they pulled out of it and have had rapid growth. And the international investing community and the IMF, which is a branch of the Treasury Department, couldn't do anything about it, even the refusal to pay debt. And Argentina, in fact, the president of Argentina said, well, we're ridding ourselves of the IMF. That means of U.S. economic strangulation. And worse, he was helped in that by Venezuela, which bought a large part of the debt. Bolivia is probably doing the same, and Brazil had already done it. Well, you know, you rid yourself of the IMF, meaning the Treasury Department, that's seriously weakening the measures of economic strangulation, and it's worse. A lot of these policies are gaining significant popular appeal. I just read a scholarly paper by a very anti-Castro Cuban-American scholar who reports, I don't know if he's where he got it from, that he said about 170,000 Latin Americans have been, in the last couple of years, have been treated in Cuban medical facilities, and most of them restoring sight under Cuban-Venezuelan programs where Venezuela pays for it and blind people, others who need medical care in the U.S. dependencies, where they can't get it, of course, are sent to Cuba, where they come back seeing they were blind. You know, okay, that has its effects on countries. It's called Operation Miracle. And within Venezuela, you know, as far as, you know, you can like it or hate it, but the interesting question is what Venezuelans think about it. Okay, well, we have good knowledge of that. There's extensive polls taken, Latin American, North American polls, and turns out that the popularity of the government has shot way up in the last since 1998, and it now is the most popular elected government in Latin America. In fact, in the hemisphere, because this government is not popular. So it's the most popular elected government in Latin America, and it keeps going up. Well, reasons not too obscure, but sure, it's driving the United States berserk. That's why you have the constant hysteria from the government and the media about the terrible things in Venezuela and Bolivia.
Noam Chomsky speaking at the United Nations yesterday. Noam Chomsky is MIT linguist. His latest book is called Failed States. And that does it for our program. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Sharif Abdelkaddous, John Hamilton, Elizabeth Press, Yoruba Richin, Aaron Mate, Frank Lopez, Jenny Utes, Mike DiFilippo, and Nick Marsilio, our engineers. Very happy birthday to Danielle Strandberg Peshkin. Thanks to Megan Whitney and Samantha Chambly. I'll be at the 92nd Street Y tonight at 8 o'clock interviewing Helen Thomas, and that's tonight at the 92nd Street Y in New York, our website, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.